You're listening to Retail Gets Real, brought to you by the National Retail Federation. Join us for a look inside the world's largest and most interesting industry. And now your host, Bill Thorne.
Welcome to another episode of Retail Gets Real, where we talk about all things retail. And there's a lot to talk about because retail impacts everyone, every day, everywhere. I'm joined today with my co-host, Sarah Rand. Sarah, you look very comfortable in those headphones.
I am very excited about today.
Why are you excited about today,
Sarah? Because I am a total fangirl of our guest today. I go to her store pretty regularly, but I'll let you guys hear more about her now.
So, Sarah, who is our guest?
Our guest is Carrie Kelly. She is the founder and owner of The Cookery, which is here in Arlington, Virginia. She also has a store in D.C.
Well, welcome to the show. We're very, very excited to have you. And I think that in looking at some of the material that we've looked at, you've got a great story to tell. And we love telling great stories. And so we don't do as good of a job of it. So we're going to let you tell the story. Tell us about yourself and how long you've been doing this.
Okay. I love stories, too, and they're great stories in the kind of business that I have. I opened my store almost 6 years ago in the Village at Shirlington, which is a very unique little neighborhood in Arlington that I grew up in. So I love being there. And I started out riding a wave of a trend of the olive oil stores. And so we opened an olive oil store, and it was called I Love Oil and Vinegar. There were no other olive oil stores in the D.C. area, so we were, you know, part of the beginning of that wave. I have since changed the name of the store. I'm sure this question will come up sometime during the course of our conversation, but if a business owner can only learn how to do one thing, it is to evolve constantly. And I realized after about 4 years that I had to keep changing things to stay ahead on the front end of this wave. And I don't know how many olive oil stores there are in the DC area now. And you start to risk getting brand dilution. So I changed the name. I had been slowly changing the portfolio. And now we're The Cookery, and I call it a culinary marketplace. And it's really a representation of things that I love. One is cooking. It's my most favorite creative outlet. And I also love the stories behind food. You know, we all read about what's happening in the sort of the big villains of the food world today. What I love about human ingenuity is that in response to all of that is this huge specialty food movement. And there are creative makers popping up all over the place and retailers to showcase them. And I wanted to be one of those. So I call ourselves, maybe this is pretentious, but a gallery for food artisans because we showcase their stories as much as we do their products.
So where do you source your products?
I source my products in a few places. One is I love to scout. So whenever we're traveling, I find specialty boutique stores and peek on their shelves and see what they have that I haven't seen before. And then you go to Google, of course, because, you know, they know everything. And so, you know, I find the stories on Google and contact people and meet them. What's really important to me is to meet them at very least voice to voice, taste what they have to offer and hear the story behind it. I go to the fancy food show, which, I mean, how much fun does that sound like? Fancy food show,
you know, it's with you next time.
Oh, absolutely. It is so much fun because, you know, they're none of the big, you know, big manufacturers there. It's all little businesses who are trying to make inroads in the specialty food world. And very often behind the booth is the person who created it, Callie's Biscuits. I met her when she was just a girl trying to sell some biscuits, you know, 7 years ago. And now at this stage in our business, a lot of people contact me, which is great.
Go ahead, Sarah.
How do you find time to travel? Most small business owners that's a lifestyle. But it sounds like you're going all over the place.
Well, no, not all over the time is a very precious commodity in the world of the business owner. But I have a husband and do my best to try to take care of this marriage the same way I do my business. And so we try to get out of town when we can. So we don't do big travels as much as I'd like to. Which would be a nice perk of the business if you had the time. But we do spend some weekends driving around places and, you know, stopping in towns and visiting places. So
you develop, I think that, you know, especially in a place like Shirlington, that you, it is a community. Mm-hmm. So do you see, as you have evolved, that it has become kind of a, you know, a community, your store is serving that community, you're building a clientele based off of that community? And if that is the case, how do you expand that?
Those are great questions. So first, yes, I do think that it is very much a community and we are serving that community. And interesting side note about Shirlington, when it was built in the 50s, it was a groundbreaking new idea in urban development, was to create this, what we now call lifestyle center. Now that's what everybody's doing. Creating the sense of community is something a little bit organic. You can do everything you can through architecture and product portfolio, the merchants that you choose, but you can't guarantee that's going to happen. In Shirlington, it's just always been there. And the people who live in Shirlington are very protective of their merchants. They love the merchants there. They go out of their way to shop with us. We recognize them. We give back to the community there. And so it's very old-fashioned in that way. How to expand is another question. It's not that easy to try to replicate something. And I think one thing I've learned this is that expansion isn't about replication. I think what you have to do is to really figure out what your brand is and how it might look in a new context. Having said that, that's a great theory, but it's hard to do. And, you know, anytime you try to expand, you're taking a risk. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it transfers to a new place, sometimes it doesn't. But that's what I think. If you really try to replicate exactly what you have, you may run into some problems with that strategy.
You want to talk a little bit about your second store and how you applied that theory to opening that store?
Yeah. So I chose Cathedral Commons in D.C. on Upper Wisconsin Avenue very deliberately. I wanted to go across the river. I love D.C. There are a lot of really cool new neighborhoods popping up in D.C., and I love to go there. But I think it's a little, for me, I felt it was a little early to give those a try. I don't think they quite have their thing yet. You know, I don't think they're quite what they're going to be one day. And I felt like that was too big of a risk to go in and try retail. Restaurants, while restaurants have a much larger failure rate, they at least catch on in the beginning faster because everybody eats, not everybody shops in specialty food stores, you know. So Cathedral Commons appealed to me because it's a neighborhood that's existed for a long time. You know, it's a well-established community in Northwest DC. And this little strip on Wisconsin Avenue has been commercial and retail for, I don't know, probably 50 years. They've just given it a whole new look. So we've only been there 6 months, and so far so good, but hopefully we'll find the same kind of thing there.
As a small business owner, I think that this is different in any business, and whether you own the business or you work in the business, but you're invested in the business, and, you know, through passion, you have to love what you do. How do you define success?
Oh, wow. You ask great questions. You know, I do think you're invested in the business, but I also think there are a couple of different ways at looking at how you're invested in a business. If you're somebody that wants to create a brand that you can franchise or open 10, you know, 10 locations or something like that, that's a different kind of investment because you have to be invested primarily in the infrastructure of the business, not in the day-to-day presence in the business, because that's impossible when you get bigger. I have a luxury of not needing to be quite that ambitious. I don't want that many stores. And what I love the most is interfacing with customers and interfacing with vendors. Meeting the creative vendor community is really, and I don't really want to lose that. It isn't as interesting to me to work on infrastructure. Critical if you're going to grow. So for me, I define success. Obviously, there's sales. I don't intend to be a nonprofit. So sales is a very pragmatic monitor. But the other things I look at are the happiness of my staff. If I've got people that are excited about what we're doing, that's a monitor of success for me. If I find I have staff that are starting to just sort of check in and show up, I have to look at myself. What am I not doing right? What stories am I not telling them? So that's a really important monitor to me. How excited are they when they're telling our story to customers? Another one, a monitor that I look at is repeat customers. How many people are coming back? One of the things that gives me the greatest amount of joy is when a customer comes in and says, this is my cousin from Dubuque, and I couldn't wait to bring them here when they came to visit. I mean, that's like, yay. I mean, that's, you know, that's sort of a home run. We're on their list of things to do when they're here to visit. So those are a couple of key ones for me. Some of the other pragmatic ones are just movement of merchandise. You know, it's always a challenge. I can be excited about something. I have to remind myself constantly, it's not about me. It's about what the customer might like. And so seeing customers get excited through purchasing about what I think is good in our store is another monitor. So that's, you know, that kind of merchandise movement is important.
I want to ask you about your pre-retail experience as an executive coach and how you bring those skills into being a business owner. You obviously care a lot about your employees.
Yeah.
How do you bridge that?
You know, it's funny. I think in life, whatever you have done, you bring into the next thing you do, whether you're conscious of that or not. And I don't know that I knew ahead of time how I was going to bring my coaching experience in, but it has been really helpful in the management of staff. I care deeply about the people that work for me. Again, there's a very pragmatic side of that. If they're happy, they're a better presence to the customer. It also just matters to me. I don't want to get to a place where they are just a number on the payroll system. You know, I want to know about their life and care about them and help them grow. If somebody leaves me, I want them to leave with something that's valuable to the next thing they do in their life. Rather, they're somebody in college who's just working for me for part-time. I know it's only going to be for a year, or somebody that intends to stay longer. I really want them to go away with something more than they came in with. And so I think I'm able to do that successfully a fair number of the time because of my coaching experience. And that really taught me how to pay attention to the human being. Same thing with customers. I bring it into my staff training a lot in how to treat a customer and pay attention to who it is you're talking to. You know, this customer has come in for a reason, and pause long enough to figure out what it is. Do they just need something to be happier about today? Or do they have a problem to solve, like a birthday present or an anniversary present? Or are they trying to change their diet and they really need some guidance? Really listen. Instead of just doing this one-way flow of information. We're the cookery. Here's who we are. Let me show you this. You know, stop and ask questions. Coaching is all about asking questions. That's how I train my staff to ask customers questions. You know, hi, Sarah, what do you like to eat? That kind of thing, and really engage. Eating is sort of intimate. So we get this, you know, rare look into people's kitchens and dining rooms. And so I think coaching has helped me do that more effectively.
Yeah, if you asked me what I ate, it would be very, very, very boring. I think it's cheese, meat, and Sarah would tell you hard-boiled eggs.
But see, we can make that more exciting with a really good sea salt. Or,
you know, there's a lot of people that it's their dream to start a business, to own a business and to grow a business. And so there are probably people listening that are thinking, should I do this? Can I do this? Is this a leap that I want to take? What advice do you give them?
I came from business owners. Both of my parents own their own business. My mother had a retail business and interior design. Both of my sisters own their own business. So I come from a family of entrepreneurs. And I do get asked this question a lot because I love mentoring other people with the little bit I know I want to share with somebody else. And so there are a couple of things I tell people. One is be real clear what it is you think you want to do. So if you think retail is fun, do some homework. So study retail. Like what kind of retail? I did a lot of research before I opened our store. That's still not a guarantee of success. But doing some research on your industry and really understanding, it's not just, as I said earlier, it's not just about what you like. It's about what the customer is going to like and need. So find out who's in your space, how many people are in your space, who's doing it well, who's not doing it well. The other really important thing, I think, is that a lot of business owners go into business to do something they love. They find themselves doing a whole bunch of stuff they don't like anymore. payroll, scheduling, taxes, all the infrastructure work that is critical to the success of a business. Be prepared for that and learn about it first. Go to the Small Business Administration, take some of their courses, go to your county, sit down and talk to them about what their requirements are. Because I think when you get surprised by all the infrastructure and detail and task requirements, it can rip all the joy out of what you went into business for. And the way to preserve that joy is to develop a really good infrastructure.
You come from a family of entrepreneurs. That's really interesting. So did you find that you weren't surprised by anything, or were there things that still shocked you as being your own boss?
Yeah, they're still, oh, sure. I'm every day I'm surprised. I said to somebody the other day, the longer I do this, the less I think I know, because there are always surprises out there. But I think what surprised me the most was the infrastructure piece. I got caught off guard by that when we opened our second store. I think that when you own one location of any kind of business, there's a limited amount of infrastructure. You don't want to be too burdened with structure because you want to be agile enough to grow. One more store, the need for infrastructure quadruples. And I thought I was prepared, and I wasn't prepared enough. A little, for instance, is I have a tendency to not be tight on details anyway, but I would say to staff things like, we really want to please customers, so use your judgment if somebody comes in looking for a refund. Well, when you have one store and you're with them almost every day, they see you and are emulating your judgment. You have two stores, you're not with them. Suddenly you have twice as many people using their judgment. That doesn't work. Staff need guidance. They want to know what success looks like. They want to know they're doing it right. And so I really was surprised at how deep the need was for that kind of definition in policies and procedures. So I had a lot of catch up to do.
I really liked your answer to an earlier question about, you know, the staff. One of the things that we talk about all the time at the National Retail Federation, we're very proud and we are very passionate about our industry. But it's not the what about the industry; it's the who in the industry, what they're providing the communities that they serve, the employees that they employ, the advancement and the opportunity. And so often that's overlooked. People get stuck on numbers, right, and they just don't realize the people factor behind that and what it takes to make a successful business. It's the people.
It is.
And so anyway, Sarah, we're almost out of time, but I want to give you the opportunity to ask Carrie our last question.
I want to know what's next.
Oh, what's next for me? You know, I was talking to my coach this morning about that. What's next? I'm not sure. You know, at my stage in life, I don't think I'm really going to open any more locations. So I'm really focusing on what's next for this location. Retail is going through some really interesting transitions. You know, as online buying gets easier and sexier and more intimate, going into a store has a whole different kind of thing. So I'm really taking a close look at analyzing that and figuring out how to stay relevant for, I don't know, I think I'd like to stay around, do this for another 10 years. And how can I stay relevant and active and successful? So on the next podcast, maybe I'll have an answer, but that's the question I'm living in right now.
Well, it's a great opportunity to sit down with you, Carrie. It's phenomenal to be in the presence of someone that has done something, lived a dream, has been successful in doing it, and is doing it incredibly well. And so we're very honored to have had you with us. And Sarah, thank you. I think that your enthusiasm always gets us at the level that we need to go. So that's another edition of Retail Gets Real. And if you need more information, don't hesitate to reach out. It's the nrf.com where you can find out everything retail.
You've been listening to Retail Gets Real, brought to you by NRF. For more information about the National Retail Federation, visit us online at nrf.com.